You know, today's gospel reading that we just heard from Matthew chapter 22, it contains what may be the most well-known passage in the New Testament. Verse 39, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. You know, given what the year 2020 has been like for our community and our nation, I can't think of a more important thought to contemplate this morning. Now, the New Testament is not the first time we encounter this instruction from God. In fact, you just heard it in the first reading this morning from Leviticus chapter 19. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. The difference, though, between when Israel first heard the great commandment as Israel emerged from the promised land from the wilderness, and Jesus' restatement in Matthew is that several centuries had passed in between, and from the original Ten Commandments that had been given to Israel during the Exodus, priests and scribes had added law after law, and so by Jesus' lifetime, tradition has it that there were 613 laws, not 10. And not that any of them had worked all that well. In fact, Israel and its rulers had behaved so badly that the exile happened. And the interpretation and enforcement of the laws had become an important mechanism for the Jewish theological elite to maintain power. Indeed, in today's passage from Matthew, Pharisee lawyers are trying to undermine Jesus' ministry by demonstrating that Jesus is failing to obey Jewish law. And so Jesus answers this charge by saying, in effect, let me make this simple. Love God and love your neighbor. Concentrate on getting this right. 2,000 years later, we're still not getting it right. Love thy neighbor may be the single hardest thing that we are given to do as Christians. I fail at it every day. Now, to understand this about myself a little better, in preparation for this sermon, I kept a log for a week of every time I failed to love my neighbor. And the result was pretty embarrassing. One thing, apparently I'm incapable of driving in Washington traffic without swearing and cursing at other drivers. I constantly chafed at the COVID precautions I had to observe to keep others safe. I resented those who did not do the same. I recorded several times where I was dismissive of the ideas or thoughts of others. There were several instances where I actually shouted at the television when I heard something that struck me as willfully stupid. So the best I can say for myself is I know I'm not unique. My sense is that all of us are finding it increasingly difficult to love our neighbors. We are exhausted by the virus, required to keep social distance, experiencing many who will not. Our world is beginning to close in, and empathy is more and more difficult. So one thing that people do when they begin to feel overwhelmed as individuals is to look around for others in similar situations. We feel more secure with people who have the same outlook. You know the old adage, there's power in numbers. Now, sociologists and anthropologists have a name for this phenomenon. They call it group identity. And in theory, group identity can be helpful. Like-minded groups can collectively solve problems that we as individuals could not, and they can provide a sense of well-being and fellowship. Except that history teaches that when a group feels its identity is threatened, when outsiders seem to pose a challenge to the continuation of the group, terrible things can happen. Repression, persecution, war, genocide. Now, it's tempting to comfort ourselves with the idea that modern society, particularly the past 60 years or so, has moved past the mobilization of groups for violence and suppression of others. So I've also found it useful the past few weeks to remind myself that such things have occurred during my lifetime, and indeed are occurring today. Shortly after 9/11, I was invited to become a visiting professor at the Air War College in Montgomery, Alabama. And while I was there, Mary came to see me, and we decided to visit the National Voting Rights Museum in nearby Selma. The museum, which had opened a few years earlier, documents the struggle for civil rights and an end to discrimination. And in particular, there's a special focus on the march in Selma, the famous march in 1965. Many of the docents we met had been beaten by police on the Edmund Pettus Bridge, along with the late John Lewis, the famous civil rights leader who went on to 33 years in Congress. Now, Mary was not even 3 years old when this happened, and so she really only knew of it vaguely. But the visit to the museum helped me to remember and to recall a time when some whites felt the concept of racial equality to be so threatening to their identity that they orchestrated a campaign of repressions and violence to try to prevent it. Some years later, the Pentagon sent me to work in Cambodia. I knew vaguely about recent Cambodian history, but I wanted to learn more. So I visited the Killing Fields Museum in Phnom Penh. The museum is a former high school that was taken over by the Khmer Rouge in 1976 and converted into a torture, interrogation, and execution center for those who were thought to oppose the new communist regime. The high school is now a memorial to the 14,000 people who perished there. And during my visit, I did remember that the Khmer Rouge had done this when I was in college. I was alive when it happened. Somewhere between 1.5 million and 2 million Cambodians perished, 25% of the entire population. And this morning, as we meet for worship, there may be as many as 1 million Uyghurs being held in Chinese concentration camps simply because of their ethnicity and religious belief. So we are failing ourselves as individuals to live as Christ commands us. And when we come together in community, we are often acting out of fear, and the result can be deeply harmful. So I think today's reading from Matthew offers an important way forward, augmented by some other New Testament teachings. So there are two parts to the great commandment, love God and love thy neighbor. The first thought, focus on God, suggests where we can look for help regarding our own thinking and behavior. It's hard to live as God asks, but God is available to supply unlimited help if only we can learn to request it. That's why we are told to love God with all of our heart and all of our mind, because when we do, in return, God fills us with grace and love. So how to go about this? For me, the answer is clear and even simple. Pray. Pray to communicate your need for connection to God and ask for God's help in daily living. Prayer is so important that Jesus does it himself constantly. He even specifically teaches his followers how to do it and the words to use in the Lord's Prayer. As we read in James chapter 1, if any of you is lacking in wisdom, ask God, who gives all generously and ungrudgingly, and it will be given to you. For me, the key to using prayer successfully is to make it a habit. As the first letter to the Thessalonians says, rejoice always, pray without ceasing. When you fail to love your neighbor, say a prayer. When you are encountering situations where you know that you're going to be stressed or tired or tempted to lash out, pray proactively. So what about learning to live in community in a positive and godly way? Here, I believe the key is to use loving thy neighbor as a way of creating a new identity for ourselves. And that new identity is that we are people of God. This is the new identity that God offers in the Old Testament and that Jesus represents in the New Testament. We are told in 2 Corinthians that God said, I will live in them and walk among them, and I will be their God, and they shall be my people. And unlike the often toxic and exclusionary identities of contemporary nationalities, ethnicities, ideologies, this identity is open to everyone, and it is grounded in the idea of love thy neighbor. So how do we foster and encourage the adoption of this new identity? To me, the answer is witness. Live truly God's call to love thy neighbor and be willing to offer the witness that you are doing so because you're Christian. Don't be shy. When you are asked why you're contributing to CHO, explain it's because you're a Christian. When you're asked why you're helping to take voters to the polls, answer the same. When you take food to a sick neighbor, or even just spend time with someone you know is lonely, let them know why. The community of the people of God is a gift from God, but it won't form and sustain itself. This is the work that God has given us to do. Let's each of us reaffirm this charge this week by loving God and loving our neighbor as ourselves. Amen.